This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When Marie Hicks tells people that she studies the role of women in computer ads at the dawn of the digital age, folks immediately make assumptions. They guess that models were probably all tarted up, selling computing equipment, much the way women are used to sell everything from beer to cars today. But consider the Powers Girl, an advertising mascot created for a British computing company in the 1950s. Standing next to a colossal computer, she's dressed in professional wear. She's got an office attire of that day, a long chaste skirt and a jacket with a blouse. It was a common image for the early era of technology marketing. Back then, most people who worked in computers were women. But Marie Hicks will tell you that advertising images like the Powers Girl may have helped shape the role of women as low-cost, unskilled workers well into the late 20th century. Marie Hicks is a visiting assistant professor of history at Duke University. She's the managing editor of the Journal of History of Medicine and Allied Sciences, housed at Duke, and she is my guest on the program today. Welcome, Marie. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
You recently had an article published called Only the Clothes Changed, Women Operators in British Computing and Advertising, 1950 to 1970. That's an extremely specific topic. Now, how'd you get interested in that?
Well, I was in a history program as an undergraduate, but then after that, after I graduated, I kind of fell into being a Unix systems administrator for a while. And one of the interesting things I noticed while I was working was that there were a lot more women higher up in the organization, older women, than there were young women coming in to replace them. And I was kind of interested in what might be the historical reasons for that anomaly. And that was sort of the spark of what got me interested in looking at the history of women in computing.
And what did you find out about that question?
Well, you know, since I study the British context, I can do some comparisons, but that specific question, you know, I may never have an exact answer to it.
Why did you focus on Great Britain?
Well, that's a really good question. And part of the reason I did it is because I feel like the history of the United States in terms of history of technology is a bit overstudied. And it's good, I think, to bring in comparative stories, because if we're always only looking at the same context, we're not going to learn as many lessons as we could. And then the other reason was Britain had a really great start in computing. There was a lot of interesting stuff going on. You know, they had the first digital electronic programmable computer during the war that did very important work for the Allies. And so that was another reason that I was interested in looking at Britain.
And what did you find about the role of women at that time? Because as you say, there were more women actually in management positions. What was going on then?
Well, what I found was that early on, there were a lot of women in computer operation and even programming, because before they were using electronic machines, women were running the electromechanical machines that were doing accounting and data processing. It was seen as feminized work. And when the electronic computers came in, this labor force, this feminized labor force, carried over. And it wasn't until a bit later that the field kind of professionalized and started to acquire this masculine image that I think it still has to a certain extent today.
So that you're talking about key cards and key punch operators, right? People who punched in information.
Right. So there's all the workers who put the data onto the punch cards that, you know, that go into the computers, but also the people who are actually running the computers, modern day systems administrators are kind of their descendants. Those people in the beginning were primarily women as well.
And the fact is, there were no personal computers back then, so the only people with computers were universities and mostly businesses.
Right. Government, businesses, universities.
So when it comes to advertising, the clients are, or the target audience really are businesses. So tell us what you found in terms of what kinds of ads we might see back then.
Sure. So what I found in looking at these advertisements was that women were reflected, their prevalence in the field was reflected in the ads, but they weren't really viewed as high-skill workers or career workers. They weren't viewed as, say, computer operators, but rather as low-skill, kind of almost secretarial or office support staff. The idea that the ads tried to convey was that anybody could do this work pretty much, or that you wouldn't have to spend a lot of time on labor training and wouldn't have to spend a lot of money on getting people to work these machines. So, for instance, one of the advertisements in the ad shows a woman standing next to the keyboard of a computer, and it says, this secretary is all you need to program this computer and basically run your, you know, your whole accounting and invoicing and stock control with the aid of, you know, the computer and the secretary.
So on the one hand, you might think when you use the word only that I just have to hire one person. So you limit the numbers. But it also tells us a little bit about how we felt about women in the workplace. They aren't up to much, and yet that's all you need.
Right, right. And even more than that, you know, from a very brass tacks perspective, they didn't need a lot of expensive training and they would have high turnover, you know, because the expectation was that they'd leave and go get married. So if you could get a woman to do this job, then the idea was you didn't have a lot of long-term costs in terms of training or putting money into a pension and things like that.
Can you describe some of the other ads that you saw apart from the Powers Girl or how the Powers Girl then may have changed slightly over time?
Sure, sure. Well, I think one set of images that really shows how things are changing in terms of the images, but not necessarily in terms of what they're trying to convey to business buyers, are they're not actually ads, but they're images of the demonstration teams for one British computer company. And these teams would go around to business exhibitions and basically show off the machines and show how they work to potential customers. And in 1965, you see this team of about five women, and they're very professionally attired. They almost look like the Powers Girls with the business suits and so forth. But by 1970 or so, you have this enormous team of women in mini skirts and white linen pantsuits with, you know, the latest fashions, and they have bright orange scarves, and you see that they're fulfilling the same function, but now, of course, they're trying to inject some sort of sex appeal into the advertising that they're doing at these trade shows.
So at a certain point, women become sexualized with regard to advertising for computers and not just the symbol of an easy trainable unit, right? What happened? What caused that transition?
Well, I think that has to do a lot with just kind of the broader cultural trends and the sort of the loosening of sexual mores and, you know, the swinging 60s in London and so forth. So I guess it has a lot to do with that. The interesting thing to me is that when that does happen, I think it then leads to this perspective we have now, or a lot of us have now, and certainly I had going in, where we think, oh, well, the women must have been in the ads only for reasons of sex appeal, when really that wasn't the case for a long, long time.
And, of course, they're advertising in mostly trade magazines. These aren't public, you know, consumer magazines.
Right, right. So the need for that sort of injection of sexuality would probably be less.
And you found a couple of there were also cartoon ads that you found interesting as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Some of the British computer companies had their own little in-house magazines, and they would have cartoons in them occasionally. And one of the ones that I found really kind of striking was this one where two women computer operators are trying to fix their own machine rather than waiting for the male technician to come in and do it for them. And they're literally, you know, arm deep in it, trying to fix it with bobby pins. And the technician comes in and he's, of course, stunned to see what they're doing. And I thought that one was really interesting because by poking fun at these gendered roles, it both shows, you know, sort of how far you could and couldn't go and if you were a woman or if you were a man, depending on what sort of work you were doing.
Now, when it comes to the digital technology, computer design, computer science, we still find, I think, more men than women. And that's one of the something we notice today. It seems to me that the function is different, though. If you're talking about designing software and designing computers, that's one job. And then there's using computers on the other hand. Is that still more like women's work, using the software, using Excel and all of those programs that get used in business offices?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could definitely make a strong case for that. And certainly data input, I think, is still a pretty feminized field in image, if not in terms of numbers. In 1984, actually, that was when we saw the peak of the percentage of undergraduate degrees awarded to women in computer science. And then it actually fell from 1984 on to about 2005 or so. And only now has it sort of started climbing back up. And there have been a lot of initiatives at Carnegie Mellon, other universities that are very good in computer science, to try to figure out what's going on here and how we can maybe change women from being in the aggregate, you know, not just users, but designers, like you point out.
And 1984, 85, that's the threshold. That is the actual dawn of personal computing right in that age.
That's true.
In that year. So the universe is changing. How did advertising change as well at about the same time?
You know, in my work, I don't really go up that far, but just anecdotally from what I've seen, I think it does. And I think one of the things that you begin to see is actually the absence of people in computer advertisements. And what you start to see actually is just more and more of a focus on the machines and on the hardware.
That's interesting. Is there any way to tell whether that appeals more to men? Or if I had to guess right now, I would say that an ad that has only the machine spinning around might appeal more to men than to women.
I really don't know. But what I would assume is that it would appeal more to people who have already maybe some familiarity with machinery in general, because they're going to be less intimidated by an image like that. And so in that sense, I think you're right that maybe it may appeal more to, say, young boys and men.
And the ads that feature the technology itself tend to be more in print, because we've seen the television commercials that feature personalities and try to attach a personality, a certain type of personality with a certain type of machine, whether it's Mac or PC.
Yeah. And I think as, you know, as you get into television ads and very recent ads, the way that computers have really become consumer entertainment devices has really made the way they're advertised change quite a lot from, say, even, you know, the early 90s.
Has the change in digital technology and the uses we put it to had much of an effect on women's roles and our perception of women in the workplace?
That's a really good question. And I'm honestly not fully sure of the answer to that. I think that it probably has caused some significant changes, but they're probably ones that we're going to have to wait a little while to you know, get some distance from before we can fully suss out what they've all been.
Are we seeing more women going into computer design and programming these days after that sharp turnaround in the mid-80s?
Yeah, well, I think since about 2005 or so, we have been seeing a rise. It was down to something like a quarter of all undergraduate degrees awarded going to women, and I think it's been rising since then, so that's positive. And also, some schools have done really successful programs where they've tried to institute mentoring and other things that help women not just feel comfortable getting into the field, but really, even more importantly, staying in the field and not dropping out either before graduation or afterwards when they get into the workforce.
What do you think, and I know this goes beyond the scope of your particular paper, but what might account for the fact that when digital technology changed, more personal computing and more games and entertainment, we didn't see a proliferation of women in sexualized roles? Instead, we saw technology itself as the feature and not sexualized women that's used to sell just about everything else we buy.
That's a really, really good question. And the only thing I can imagine is that the people making these ads thought that they were handling or going for a different demographic, a demographic that was going to be more interested in a pretty machine than a pretty lady. But of course, that's changed, you know, in the past decade or so, where we do see both. We see the machines and the injection of sex appeal into the ads a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, I haven't said for a minute do I think it's not there at all, but it's interesting that they didn't make that you know, the focus. Since you've begun this field of study, what are some of the surprising things that you've noticed, things that you really hadn't expected at all, now that you're looking at this particular field?
Well, I think one of the most surprising things that I found out was really just the prevalence of women in early computing, and then attached to that, looking at how, as they lose out, as the field starts to professionalize, that isn't really for reasons that I might have expected. It's not because they're seen as technically incompetent, but rather because they're seen as poor choices for a lot of investment in, so that, they're not going to be around for a full career, so why should we train them? Even if they're as competent, they're not going to have long working lives. And the other thing that I saw that was kind of surprising was that there was really a focus on allying technical workers with management roles. And because women were seen for much of this period as not going to be able to manage male staff as well or at all, that also kind of hurt them. But interestingly, it wasn't about a perception that they were technically inept, which is something that I think we do sort of have a stereotype about today.
How do you know that? I mean, how do you know that it wasn't a perception that women can't handle the technology, that wasn't part of the reason?
Sure. Well, because you'll see hiring managers and the managers who are in charge of doing the training and sending people to get trained saying, oh, we've sent this batch of women off to get their training in this high-level computing language or whatever, and they're doing very well, and they've come back, and they're doing all the programming we need. But we're a little concerned about how many women we're building up in this installation because, what if they all start getting married and things like that?
How did those perceptions, do you think, I mean, this would be fun to speculate about, how those perceptions certainly changed the number of women in management positions, which changes the way we do education, which changes the products we now make. I mean, how might things have changed, or how much of an impact do you think it has on today's digital technology, both from the product point of view and research and development, that women weren't more involved earlier on?
That's a fascinating question, and I can really only speculate, but you're right in, drawing this sort of domino effect between all these institutional processes, and it's really hard to say what might have happened. But one of the things that I think, just on a very basic level would have been different is when you have, more people in a field, whether it's more men or more women, and we don't really have enough people in these fields today. The NSF is trying very hard to get more people, men and women alike, in these fields. You get a greater multiplicity of perspectives, and you get more diverse solutions to problems. So I think, that's one way that things would have been different.
Tell us, on your webpage, there's an ad, and it features the ICL-80, and it says the ICL-80 brings a touch of glamour, and there are two women in the ad. What did you find interesting about that ad?
Well, I guess I found that ad interesting and put it on the website because it is one of these sex appeal ads, and it's anomalous to what I found in my research, but it's kind of funny to me, and I think it does grab people's attention because, you don't expect to see an ad where two model like looking women are strutting around in a machine room.
And what year was this?
That one was from the mid-1960s, I think.
Well, that ICL-80 always turned me on. I know. Heck of a machine. Marie, thank you so, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Marie Hicks is visiting assistant professor of history at Duke University. She's also the managing editor of the Journal of the History of Medicine and Allied Sciences. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the role of corporate subsidies in job creation in North Carolina. Stay with us on the State of Things.